Today we'll discuss the issue of Bishul Yisroel in Pas Yisroel, which means to say that in order for Bishul cooking to be acceptable, in many cases it has to be done through a Jewish person. And baking is called Pas Yisroel. Any kind of baking has to be done through a Jewish person. There are certain very special ordinances which were instituted in early times in Jewish history by the great sages that lived then, and they concerned cooking and baking. The sages considered cooking and baking to be very personal things, and it invites deep friendships when there are people that cook for each other, families that share the cooked food one with another. What can often result from that is a personal friendship, which eventually might lead to the union of the families and to marrying into one another. And they wanted that the food that's cooked in a Jewish household should be cooked by the members of the household. And therefore, they instituted very strict regulations regarding the preparation of bread, which is called Pas Yisroel, bread that should be baked in the proper way. And the same thing with Bishul Yisroel, which is cooking done by Jews for Jews. We have a set of very strict regulations to make sure that things are done properly. And therefore, they chose to limit their strictness to a certain set of foods which are important, which are considered to be special foods that create closer bonds between people, as opposed to simpler foods which aren't considered to be that important and are not family foods, and that couldn't lead to anything. The first limit that we have is things which are not oil al shulchan melochim. It means food that is not fit to be served at a king's table, which means to say food that's not eaten in a dignified way at very special affairs, such as at the feasts which are prepared for royalty or for nobility, or very special feasts like weddings and important meals which are eaten in a very distinctive way. Anything that can't be presented at such a meal because it's too simple and too commonplace, then there are no restrictions as to how the cooking should come about. Then there's food which could be eaten raw. Sometimes you have fruits which could be eaten raw, but they could be prepared in a very special way, like baked apples or apple pie. These foods are nechal kamoshe hu chai. They're eaten as they are even before the cooking is done. These two are not subject to the restrictions of Bishul Yisroel, and they could be cooked by anyone. Even foods which required a certain preparation in order to make them edible, but that preparation was outside of the cooking, prior to the cooking. For instance, pickled herring, which is not cooked but soaked in a brine, salt water, until it becomes fully edible. And then afterwards, if it's cooked, they call that kippered herring. That, too, is allowed because before the cooking, it was fully edible. And it's just as the same as those foods that could be eaten when they're raw. These are the two main exceptions to the restrictions of Bishul Yisroel. And very often when deciding whether you have to have the act of cooking performed by a very special attendants, mashgichim, you examine to see if the food could be served at a royal table and if it's edible when it's raw. These things change from time to time. For instance, we had the question recently of artichokes. Artichokes in many countries are only eaten when they're cooked, and it was always considered a food that could only be eaten cooked and was never eaten raw. But it's become more and more popular recently to serve raw artichokes, and thus the artichoke doesn't have to be prepared, especially by Jewish hands. And that is the act of cooking, which we'll describe in a moment. Now, the same thing applies to many, many types of foods. Today there is fish, which is eaten raw, and perhaps it could be claimed that these items of fish that are served as sushi and are very commonly eaten raw are also not subject any longer to the restrictions of Bishul Yisroel. But these are not easy things to decide upon, because it's possible that sushi is just some type of trendy food which is not an ordinary food, and fish in the ordinary circumstances is always eaten only after it's cooked. Now, in order for the cooking to be considered Bishul Yisroel, so the sages divided up cooking and baking into three parts. There's the actual kindling of the fire, which is called Shigiras HaTanur. In the ancient times, it meant taking a flame that existed somewhere else, usually, and carrying it over and taking kindling wood and lighting the kindling wood. Today we have pilot lights, and we have electronic igniters and all kinds of methods of striking up a flame. But striking up the flame and beginning the fire is considered the first act in the cooking of the food. During the cooking, there's the adjustment of the flame. In the ancient times, flames were composed of coals, and the stoking of the flame, which is called chitui b'gecholim, to make it hotter or to make it cooler as the need arose, this act is, if it's done by Yisroel, it's sufficient, even if everything else was done by Akum, which means that even if the flame was originally lit, not by Yisroel, or in the actual cooking, placing of the food on the flame and stirring it and all the other parts of the cooking, or also not done by Yisroel, still it's enough if the Yisroel came from time to time and stoked the flame so that it should burn better. That would be enough to take the flame. Even one act of chitui does the trick. It makes the flame kosher, like we say, a kosher flame, and that serves as Bishul Yisroel. The third, of course, is the act of cooking itself, which, as I said before, it refers to anything that's done with the actual food. The cooking itself, by the way, could sometimes be accomplished through the turning on of the flame, if the item is already on the stove or is already in the oven, and it's sitting there and waiting for the flame to be turned on. The one who turns on the flame is considered the one who's cooking the food, not just the one who ignited the flame. Because the Gemara says that if all the food is prepared, it's in a pot, and it's lying in the water, and it's perched above the coals, the one who applies the fire to the coals, it's as if he did all of the cooking from beginning to end. By bread, too, we have these three, of course, the one who ignited the flame, the one who stoked the coals to adjust the flame, and the one who put the item in the oven. Now, there are different customs among Jewish communities. One is that of the Eastern communities, the Sfaradim, and it's not just in the East, because the Sfaradim are dispersed to the four corners of the globe just as much as the Ashkenazim are, which are Western Jews, Jews from European origin. All communities date back to the times of the Temple, the Beis HaMikdash, but throughout the ages, there were two distinct communities that formed certain differences, minor differences in most cases, in halachic practice. The Sfaradim will say that any one of these three acts that are done by Yisroel is sufficient only when it comes to bread or baked items. But when it comes to cooked items, the only thing that makes it allowed is if the Yisroel did the actual cooking, the preparation of the flame, the stoking, the adjustment. That is not sufficient to consider it to be a Bishul Yisroel. Except in the case that I told you before, where the food is already in the oven and turning on the flame is doing the entire cooking, then everyone agrees that it's considered cooking, not just the preparation of the flame. The methods of cooking have become a lot more complicated since the early times. For instance, quite a bit of our cooking is done by steam. We have large steam-jacketed kettles, and then there's a boiler where lots of water is brought to a boil, and there's a conducting system which makes the steam that's generated by this boiler travel through pipes and reach a coat between two layers of pot on the outside of the large kettle, and it's considered to be a steam jacket. The entire outside, or at least half of the pot, half of this kettle, is bathing in steam. It causes a very even and quite an efficient way of cooking. And it's very common in industry. It's even in some private kitchens. Here, it may be that if the Yisroel just opened the valve and allowed the steam to come in, if the food's already in the pot, then, of course, it should be considered an act of cooking done by Yisroel, because the entrance of the steam is what causes the food to be cooked. It's a direct effect of the action of the Yisroel when the food is being cooked. But if the Akum lit the flame and brought the water to a boil, and he also filled the kettle, and the kettle is empty, if the kettle is empty, and the Yisroel just releases the valve and allows the steam to flow in between the walls of the kettle, so he did nothing but just move the steam a little closer to the pot. The igniting of the flame was done by a non-Yisroel, and the stoking, if any, of the coals was also done by the same person, and the food was put in later when the steam already surrounded the pot. This, of course, means that all three acts, all parts of cooking, were done by an Akum and not a Yisroel, and it will render the food not permissible. Of course, again, if the food fulfills the above requirements of being something that can't be eaten before the cooking has begun, and that it's an important food that's worthy of being placed on the king's table. Now, sometimes there are complicated methods of cooking which require a couple of steps in between the igniting and the actual cooking of the food. Let's refer to this case of boiling steam and bringing the steam into the jacket of the kettle. If a Yisroel turned on the flame, that means this flame and this heat was generated by Yisroel. And then the food was filled by anyone. And even if the non-Yisroel came and opened up a valve and allowed the steam to move from the boiler through the pipes into the jacket, the food is being cooked by a flame that's completely created and generated by a Yisroel. Now, if the Yisroel would have taken the flame and brought it to its place, and then someone else would have put the food right next to it, so that would be called Bishul Yisroel, because the flame is done by Yisroel. If the flame is brought over to the food, it's the same as if the food is brought over to the flame. The food is being cooked by the fire that was lit by the Yisroel, even though he lit the boiler, but he lit that fire, and the fire is creating all that heat, which is eventually going to be used for cooking. But in the case of the steam jacketed kettle, so the one who opened up the valves and allowed the heat generated by the Yisroel to be brought around the kettle, which is already filled with food, so it means that the Yisroel's flames are doing the cooking, and the non-Yisroel only brought the food closer to where, only brought the heat generated by the Yisroel, rather, close to the food. There's really no difference, as Tosfos explains, whether the food is brought to the flame or the flame is brought to the food. Now, when it comes to baking, there are slight differences, even according to Ashkenazim, who hold that the basic rules are the same for cooking and baking. First of all, food baked items coming from a public bakery is called palter. Palter means a public bakery which bakes in quantity and sells to the public. There are countries or cities where the custom was to accept such food, even if it's completely non-Yisroel. If by cooked food, there's no such custom. It's not an acceptable custom, even if there were such a custom. And the food has to be cooked and prepared by Yisroel. In the case of bread, we are allowed to use bread, cakes, and baked items if they're cooked by a non-Yisroel in places where the custom is to accept them, and only if they come from a public bakery called a palter. Now, there's another major difference between baking and cooking. When food had been already baked by a non-Yisroel, and now it's not acceptable because it's baked items that perhaps don't come from a professional bakery or come from a place where the custom is not to accept these foods, if the bakery is a public bakery. In either case, it wouldn't be acceptable. But if the Yisroel takes that baked item and puts it back into the oven and leaves it there for a sufficient time to improve its quality, make it perhaps more crisp and toasty or more well done, even though it was completely edible beforehand, we allow that. That's acceptable. When it comes to cooking, that's not sufficient. If the food was cooked by a non-Yisroel and it's completely cooked, then it's unacceptable, and the forbidden status of it, which is called bishulakim, cannot be reversed. When is the last time that the Yisroel has a chance to begin the cooking and save it from becoming forbidden? And that depends on the difference in custom between the Jews of Sephardic origin and those of Ashkenazic origin. The Sephardim consider machul ben drusoy. Machul ben drusoy means when the food is, we would say, very rare, which means to say it's cooked no more than a third of its full cooking, and it could only be eaten by someone who's from a very hardy person. The drusoy probably are the Druze that we have today, and their habit is to eat food which is extremely rare, not cooked, more than a third of its cooking, once it reaches that level, then you can't reverse the forbidden status, the iser of Bishul Akum. When it comes to Ashkenazim, on the other hand, as long as the food still needs a little bit cooking, even if it was completely done by an Akum, till that point, a Yisroel could complete it, even though the completion is just a small fraction, as long as it was inedible at the time that Yisroel got hold of it, even if it's just slightly, barely inedible. It's sufficient for the Yisroel to take it off and or mix the food, replace it, and consider it to be a Bishul Yisroel. So Bishul Yisroel has a leniency, which Pas Yisroel has a much greater leniency in that same area. In the Pas, in the area of baked items, is a chance to reverse the Yisr, even if it's almost or completely fully baked, as long as it could be improved by the Yisroel taking it and putting it back into the oven. And by Bishul, he has to complete the cooking, either no later than after a third of its cooking has been done for the Sephardic people, or even if the small percentage is still remaining and it can't be eaten because of the little bit of cooking that it needs, that's enough for Yisroel to come in and save it from being condemned as Bishul Akum. Bishul Yisroel is one of the difficult areas in kashrus. When it comes to ingredients and the sources of the ingredients, once they're purchased and they're stored and they're protected, they're labeled and they're followed and monitored, you know you have ingredients which are kosher. When it comes to cooking and baking, then you have to have the presence of Yisroel there in the plant at all times. And that may be very, very, very difficult. And it puts a lot of pressure on people who are trying to make the food allowed. Bishul Akum, as we said before, is simply not allowed. It's not just a hidur, something special. The amount of effort put into making sure that it's Bishul Yisroel, I'd like to add parenthetically, is probably greater than anything else in the field of kashrus. Now, there are all kinds of innovative ideas which people developed and created in order to make the strictures of Bishul Yisroel a little bit easier. There's been some sort of a minor movement in recent years, for people to take a light bulb and place it in an oven and say, look, the flame that's going to be used to bake the bread or the cake that's going to come into this oven is, of course, being lit by a non-Yisroel and stoked and adjusted, and the food is put into the oven by a non-Yisroel. But we have to look at the flame as if part of it comes from the hands of Yisroel, because he left a light bulb, which adds a tiny amount of heat to the entire heat of the oven. The problem with this is that when you add just a small amount to the flame, that's what we call hashlochas kisem. In the old days when there was a coal flame or a wood flame, so sometimes you could throw in a toothpick and just adjust the flame, and consider that to be a hachshoras ha'esh, making the fire kosher. But this method of doing some little insignificant act and making the fire acceptable is only applicable when there's already a fire. Then the Yisroel could go over and do something to the fire to make it as if it's the fire of Yisroel, and not to, even though it's just a small amount of fuel that was put onto the fire. But it can't be done when there is no fire, and the Yisroel will just light a toothpick and drop it into the oven, and the non-Yisroel will then go ahead and light the entire fire. That toothpick isn't considered a contribution to the already existing flame, which will make that flame acceptable and kosher. So it's very, very, very difficult to find a legitimate basis for accepting this light bulb or glow bulb that some people place into the oven, because there's no hecker, there's no recognizable action of the thrall who participated somewhere along in the baking process, which makes the throwing in of the little sliver of wood acceptable. You can't do that in advance when there's an empty oven. Whatever fire the thrall puts into this empty oven has to be sufficient to cause baking, or to take an existing flame which could bring about baking or cooking, and for him to do some adjustment to it, even if it's a small amount of adjustment, and that would be enough. That's like chitu b'gecholim, it's a hecker, it's something that makes it clear to people who observe the process that without the intervention of the Yisrael, it would have been acceptable, and that's sufficient. Some people go as far as setting up a timer system. The Yisrael sets up a timer which would allow the flame to be ignited. It would allow the electronic ignition system to be operated, and the Yisrael just sets up that timer. And he made it so that every day between the hours of 2 and 4, the electronic system would be in operation, and even though there's no further action done by the Yisrael in hundreds of bakings over a period of a long time, but it's enough because it's considered like his action contributed to the flame. Again, this is not considered a valid action because it's at best koich koichoi, which means it's a cause to a cause, and it's not something that's an action in the directly or indirectly involved in the cooking or baking of the item. I've heard of cases where people were even more creative when it came to halacha, and they had a Yisrael plumber who put in the gas lines, and they would explain that, well, it's his gas lines that's bringing about the cooking. If not for the plumber, there would be no gas line here, and that's to be considered a contribution. And the same thing they would probably apply to an electrician who put in the electric lines. If you have some electronic system, it's all the same. We have no source for allowing such a thing, and the resulting product is not called Bishul Yisrael at all. There's a very, very common device, which is now not allowed, I believe, in new kitchens, but it was the staple of all old kitchens, and that's a pilot light. A pilot light is flame that exists and burns constantly 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's applied by a tiny little amount of gas. And if the Yisrael turned it on, so people would claim that the pilot light belongs to the Yisrael, and it makes the cooking, even if the cooking is done completely by Nakum, it makes it acceptable. The rationale behind this is that there's a halacha found in the Sefer called Issa V'Heter, which is one of the primary forum in halacha. And there it says that if the Akum is lighting a flame in his bakery or cookery and has no flame to bring in to use to ignite his oven, and he goes to the house of Yisrael and borrows the use of a little piece of wood which has a flame on it, it's sufficient because the flame was generated by a Yisrael's flame. And the Israelite says that that's good enough, even if the place where the cooking is done, the oven or the stove where the cooking is done, has no direct contribution from an action of Yisrael, still in all, since the source of the fire came from the Yisrael's fire, it's good enough. The same type of thinking would make a pilot light acceptable. Because if the Yisrael lit the pilot light, so it comes out that every consequent flame that's used in this oven or this stove is taking the flame created by the Yisrael and using it as a source for his cooking. The Ramo says that food cooked in this method is allowed. It's not clear from the words of the Ramo whether it's allowed to do l'chatchila, which means go ahead and do it, no questions asked, or whether it's only permitted ex post facto if it was already done. But you definitely cannot do it like that from the very beginning and say that it's sufficient to consider the food being prepared to be Bishul Yisro. Now, there are many other problems in cooking food, of course, and the prime issue that the greatest effort is spent in determining is whether the ingredients are kosher. I mentioned that earlier. Some say that the reason for requiring Bishul Yisroel is so that in every cooking there should be the presence of Yisroel so that he could clearly monitor the ingredients that go into the food and see if they're all coming from a kosher source. Others say that when it comes to Bishul Yisroel, it's the same as by Pas Yisroel. And the reason for requiring Yisroel to do the baking or the cooking is so as to discourage too much of a personal friendliness between the different families. Now, there are certain exceptional cases where Bishul of a non-Yisroel is allowed, but these shouldn't be determined by a non-expert halacha. One of these is the case where it's being done by someone who must do the work that he or she is being instructed to do, sort of a type of bondage, which would make it allowed, because nothing that would create a state of personal friendliness between the family of the cook and the family of the one who hired them. Others say that this alone is not enough, and the circumstances where this would be allowable is different, and that would require, of course, quite a bit of discussion to get involved in the different situations that we find, to know whether that's sufficient. There are cases of cooking which are so highly industrialized that it's practically impossible to do it in a Jewish home. One of them is cooking cans in a cannery. Cans could be cooked at home. Canning could be done by a private person. But the method that's used to do industrial canning is to place a big, giant basket filled with cans into a item called a retort, which is like a large pressure cooker. And the steam is let in there to perhaps 500-600 degrees Fahrenheit. And under this great pressure and a large amount of concentrated heat, the food is cooked inside of the can. That's called retorting. Some say that this is acceptable because the method of cooking is impossible to duplicate and arrange that it should be in a private home. So you need these large pressure cookers, which will generate that much steam. Otherwise, the can, which is cooking, will explode because the pressure will be built up inside the can. And the can can only survive if there's an equal amount of pressure outside, which will balance the inside and outside pressure and prevent an explosion. And that piece of equipment that could do this is too large and bulky for the kitchen of a personal private home. Still in all, there were poiskim who permitted it because they held that it's not the type of cooking that could lead to friendliness because it's not done in the home and it can't even be done. The home will never be able to accommodate machinery of this sort. Now, there are times when it's just impossible to provide for Bishul Yisroel, and in these circumstances, a person should cook the food at home if there's no food to be gotten. That doesn't have the basic requirements Bishul Yisroel fulfilled. And a person just should consider the food cooked by a non-Yisroel as being just another kind of forbidden food. But there is a certain leniency involved in it, and that is that the vessel in which the non-Bishul Yisroel food was cooked, and the walls of the vessel absorbed a certain amount of taste and food absorption. In ordinary cases, if non-kosher food was cooked to purge the pot and to make it clean and ready to be used again for kosher food, it has to be boiled out. And in most cases, you have to wait 24 hours to do the boiling. This is called kashering. In the case of food that was not Bishul Yisroel, there are different opinions, and you could rely on leniencies in the purging of the vessels, and it's not called as if it's a totally non-kosher. As if the vessel is unacceptable. There are many other laws governing Bishul Yisroel, and it's impossible to present any more than that in a brief outline of the kind that we're giving over here. But one thing people should be aware of, I mentioned earlier, is how much effort, sincere effort, and actual out-of-pocket costs have to be invested in order to ensure that the food is cooked in the proper manner. One of the most difficult requirements to fulfill is the requirement of Bishul Yisroel. Let's hope that all the food that we eat should fulfill the highest level of kashrus. It should be kosher for everyone in the world, not just for people who choose to live their life with kulis, with leniencies, but it should be something that everyone could point to this food and say, this is exactly what the Torah requires. I've done everything I can, and hope and pray, like the Torah says, for the Ribbono Shel Olam, God Almighty, to respond and to say, I accept all your efforts and all your accomplishments, and now I'm going to bless you in return and bring to you a bracha for you and your family, and ultimately for all of the Jewish people, that we should be able to return to when the end of the exile comes, and the Jews will be gathered together from the four corners of the earth. Thank you.